Chapter 4. General Zachary Cord cut an imposing figure. He stood 5'11" in his stocking feet, and he had a trim, muscular build. He was 52 years old, but he looked much younger. His dark hair was only beginning to streak with gray, and his cornflower blue eyes were sharp and alert. He looked like a hero, handsome, with a strong jaw and chiseled facial features. He was like a coiled spring, all controlled tension, and he spoke in a clipped, authoritative manner. "How much did Franks tell him?" "Enough," said his executive officer, Colonel Seth Tyler, of the Cobra Force. Tyler was about 5'8", well-built, with sandy blonde hair and hazel eyes. Like his commander, he was in peak condition, and he held himself with the tight bearing of a professional soldier. "As soon as the security commander found out that Franks had talked to one of the regular personnel, he sent some men out to bring Sergeant Tracy in for questioning. That's when they found out he wasn't at his post. They reported back to Lieutenant Royce, and he sent a detail to look for him, just in case Tracy decided to slip off to the latrine or something. Then he questioned Franks again. Franks tried to deny that he had said anything at first, but he broke down pretty easily. Apparently, he spilled enough to Tracy that he believed it and went over the wall."
"Why wasn't I notified immediately?" snapped Cord.
"Royce didn't want to start ringing the bell till he was sure there was a fire. The obvious place for Tracy to go to was into Cheyenne, so he sent a squad of SPs to look for him. He figured Tracy would be easy to run down. He was on foot and dressed in full combat gear. That would make him pretty conspicuous. They followed the most direct route Tracy would have taken, and they found the little bar where Tracy stole a car out of the lot. He hotwired it and took off. Some locals gave pursuit, but Tracy fired off a few bursts and discouraged them. My guess is he'll probably make for Denver. We sent a chopper out to intercept him. We don't know if he managed to get to a phone, but even if he did call anybody, his story would have sounded pretty wild. He's got no proof."
"It doesn't matter," Cord said. "We have to assume we're blown. How close are we to being operational?"
"Keeping a good safety margin, maybe a couple of days at most."
"All right, we'll proceed on schedule. I want a full assembly at Reveille tomorrow. I'm going to address the troops. All liberties are canceled as of now. I want every man in Cobra Force to turn out under arms, and I want the armory secured."
"What about Tracy?"
"I want him brought back here. That man deserted while we were under full alert, and I intend to make an example of him. Nobody goes AWOL under my command. Nobody!"
"You gonna court-martial him?"
"No, Colonel. The man's a damn deserter and a traitor. I'm going to hang him."
The old Ford, Black Ford pickup had seen better days, but though the body was badly bruised, scratched, and dented, the dash console cracked, and the seats torn, its owner had taken pains to keep its powerful V8 engine in good running order by scavenging parts from other old, dilapidated cars. The hood had been removed, exposing a cobbled-together motor that looked as if it were held together with baling wire and spit. Jury-rigged wiring, crude, homemade carburetor manifold, patched-up radiator, the whole thing looked like some kind of weird Rube Goldberg contraption with parts and hoses sticking out all over the damn place. But amazingly enough, it ran, and it ran well. It made a sound something like a cross between an old World War I biplane engine and a high-speed motorboat, a raspy, throaty as Tracy pushed it to its limits, keeping the accelerator pedal floored and punishing the shocks as the truck hurtled down the cracked and buckled roadbed of I-25, heading south toward Denver. He'd stolen it from outside a small bar in Cheyenne, but with the roar that the damn thing made, the theft had been discovered within seconds of his having hot-wired the ignition. The owner and several of his friends had come out piling out of the bar as he was backing the behemoth duly out of its parking space, where it was surrounded by similarly dilapidated heaps, and as he spun the wheel, they had opened up on him with their revolvers and semi-automatics. He had ducked down behind the wheel and gunned it as the passenger side window already starred with cracks, shattered as the bullet struck it. Then as he got the big truck rolled around, turned around, the rear window exploded into the cab from the hail of 44 Magnum, 357, and 9mm rounds, most of which continued through and smashed the windshield. As the truck slewed out of the graveyard, the graveled lot, its owner and his friends had piled into several other cars to give pursuit. Driving one-handed, Tracy had stuck the barrel of his battle rifle out the rear window of the cab and fired several bursts on full auto, purposefully aiming high so as not to hit any of them. That had discouraged his pursuers, but by now he was certain that the base knew of his desertion, and it would be a simple matter for them to connect it with the theft of the truck, so he was expecting pursuit. And as he passed the turnout for Loveland, they caught up to him. He drove with his battle helmet on as protection from the wind blast that came in through the shot-out windshield as he pushed the truck to about 100 miles an hour. With the wind and the roar of the truck's monster engine, he didn't hear the chopper coming up behind him until the 50-caliber machine gun rounds stitched the roadbed on either side of him. The X-Wing chopper passed overhead, swooping in low with its lights on. The pickup veered and he almost lost control, sliding onto the shoulder, the rear end slipping around as he fought the wheel to get the truck back on the road. The chopper gained altitude and turned, coming straight back at him. It had made another strafing run. Once more, the machine guns opened up, breasting him as the chopper made its second pass. Tracy gritted his teeth and swore. They were trying to get him to pull over. If they wanted to, they could have blasted him into oblivion on their first pass, and if he didn't stop, they would. There was no way he could outrun them. There wasn't anywhere to hide. He hit the brakes and the truck skidded, the tires breaking loose as it came across around sideways. Tracy fighting the wheel and turning it in the direction of the skid to keep from flipping over. He didn't stop to shut the engine off. He hurled himself out the door, grabbing his backpack and battle rifle. He could see the X-Wing chopper turning in for a third run. With the truck momentarily blocking him from their view, he quickly strapped on the backpack, plugged in his helmet, and activated his weapon systems computer. He had only one chance. He spoke into his helmet mic.
Rocket launcher! Target approximately 100 meters in closing! Ready when rocket!
The aiming warts appeared on the screen inside his visor, and he lined them up visually with a quick movement of his head.
Lock on target!
The computer immediately began to display the aiming data, distance, elevation, trajectory, and speed of target.
Stand by!
The chopper was starting to swoop down.
Fire!
He braced himself as the rocket ignited and left its tube, arcing up directly at the chopper. The range was too close. The chopper pilot never had a chance. The helicopter exploded in a fireball as the rocket struck, raining flaming debris down on the deserted highway. Tracy's stomach contracted. He tore his helmet off and threw up on the road. He continued to have dry heaves long after he had spewed his guts out. He leaned weakly against the truck and tried to tell himself that he had no other choice. It was them or him. That still didn't make it any easier. He had killed his fellow soldiers. Now, in addition to desertion, he was guilty of murder. He threw the backpack into the cab and climbed in, breathing heavily, gulping in air. He was shaking.
Come on, he said to himself out loud. Come on, pull yourself together, damn it.
He slammed the truck in gear and peeled out toward Denver. The phone on Linda Tellerman's desk rang, and she picked it up. It was the operator downstairs.
Miss Tellerman, I've got a collect person-to-person call for you from a Sergeant Reese Tracy of the 3rd Division, Northwest Command. He says it's extremely important. Will you accept it?
Linda frowned. She didn't know anybody by that name. Northwest Command. That would be General Cord, she thought. They had done a story on him recently. He had been placed in charge of dismantling the ICBM network out in that part of the country.
I'll take the call.
One moment. I'll switch you. Go ahead, sir.
Miss Tellerman?
This is Linda Tellerman. What can I do for you, Sergeant? Tracy, is it?
Listen, you don't know me, but I saw the stories you did on that CIA cyborg that went out of control. You had the guts to take on the government. You weren't intimidated.
Thank you, Sergeant. I appreciate that, but...
Please don't interrupt. Just listen. I was stationed out at Warren Air Force Base. General Cord is not dismantling the missiles out there. There are maintenance crews in every silo and LCF we've opened up so far, with commandos of the Cobra Force to watch over them. They're...
Wait a moment,
she said.
Back up a little. What do you mean he's not dismantling the missiles? Is there some sort of problem?
Listen, for God's sakes! The LCFs all received their launch codes back when the launch order was given during the war. Those missiles that weren't launched are still standing ready in their silos because the launch crews succumbed to the plague before they could fully carry out their launch procedures. We were supposed to open up the silos in the LCFs, stand the missiles down, and dismantle them. But Cord isn't doing that. He intends to launch them.
She frowned.
What the hell is this? Some kind of joke?
Miss Tellerman, this is no joke. I swear to God, General Cord has got all the civilian scientists they sent out to supervise on the project. He's keeping them prisoner, under armed guard. One of them got away tonight, and I had a chance to speak with him before he got recaptured. His name was Franks, Dr. Stephen Franks.
She thought it was some kind of crank call still, but purely by force of habit, Linda wrote down Dr. Stephen Franks on the pad in front of her.
He was training at the base, Miss Tellerman.
Tracy continued.
He escaped out of a second-story window and managed to get past the guards. He just happened to run into me as I was on my way to guard duty. He was scared to death, Miss Tellerman. He was trying to get to warn somebody. He said Cord's gone insane. He's planning a military coup. He's brought in special units from all across the country. Rangers and Delta Force, and merged them with the Cobra Force. The base is on full alert. Cord intends to use the missiles to blackmail the government into giving him control. If they won't do as he demands, he'll drop a peacemaker on New York. And there are enough missiles still standing in their silos for him to take out Boston, Chicago, Detroit, Atlanta, all the government centers. Once they've been retargeted and he's got them operational, there won't be any way to stop him. Even if the regular military personnel out there refuse to back him up, it won't do any good. The corporate force is in complete control of the base. No one gets issued any arms unless they're on guard duty or out working on the silos. And frankly, the way that things have been going, I'm not sure the regular troops wouldn't go along with him. Most of them haven't been paid for weeks. There won't be anything to prevent him from seizing control of the government and establishing a military dictatorship.
That's an astonishing allegation, Sergeant. Can you actually prove any of this?
No, I knew you'd ask me that,
said Tracy with exasperation.
No, I can't prove a word of it. All I've got is what Frank's told me and what I've seen for myself. Look, I was on one of the details assigned to open up the missile silos in the LCFs, and we haven't dismantled any of them. Not a single one. There are crews in there making repairs, replacing equipment, and running checks on all the systems. The underground cables and connecting LCFs to the silos are in good shape. None of the warheads have been removed. None of the consoles have been deactivated. I can't prove any of this to you over the phone, Mr. Tellerman. But you've got to believe me! You've got to tell the right authorities. Maybe they can check it out somehow. They still got to be warned. Look, I know how wild this must sound. You probably think I'm crazy, or this is some sort of hoax, but ask yourself, can you really afford to take that chance?
Where are you calling from, Tracy?
I'm calling from Denver. I was on guard duty tonight, and I went AWOL. I don't know how much time I've got, but they'll be coming after me. They've already tried to get me once. They sent a chopper out to intercept me on the road, and I had to shoot it down. But now, they've probably gotten word to the police here. If they catch me, I'm dead.
All right. Calm down, Tracy. Assuming you are telling me the truth, how can I get in touch with you again?
You can't. I'm not sure where I'll be. And no offense, Ms. Tellerman, but I don't think it would be smart for me to tell anybody where I could be found. Look, it's not that I don't trust you, but I'm scared. I'm scared to death. I'm all alone out here. But I'll call you back in 2 hours. That should give you enough time to see if you can check this out somehow. Please, Ms. Tellerman, you've got to take this seriously. A lot of people up at Warren felt strange about what was going on. We thought maybe Cord had special orders to bring the missiles back online, but none of us ever figured on anything like this. Most of the people up here don't even know what Cord is up to. I couldn't think who else to call. I figured out the news media would be my best chance to get the word out, and you were the only person I could think of. You've got to do something. Please!
All right, Tracy. Calm down. I'll look into it and see what I can do. Maybe I can help you. I've got connections in Denver through the network. But if you're jerking my chain on this, all bets are off. You understand?
I understand.
You'll be back in touch?
In a couple of hours, if I'm lucky. If you don't hear from me by then, it means I'm probably dead.
Okay, Tracy. Get back to me as soon as you can. Good luck.
Thanks. I'll need it.
She heard the click and then hung up the phone. She took a deep breath and let it out slowly. Jesus Christ, she thought. This is on the level. She picked up the phone again and dialed an extension in the building, calling down to the research department.
Randy? It's Linda. I need you to check something out for me, and I need it yesterday. Found out everything you can about it, Dr. Stephen Franks. The name seems to ring a bell. See if I've done any stories on him. He could be a government scientist of some sort, currently at Warren Air Force Base out in Wyoming. I need to verify that, if possible, and I need it ASAP.
Okay, I'll get right on it.
She hung up the phone and lit a cigarette. Then she picked it up again and called Randy back.
Randy? Linda again. Have somebody check and see if there's been any recent concentration of military units at Warren, especially elite troops, like Ranger or Delta Force units.
What are you on to?
I don't know yet, but I just got a tip. And if it checks out, we're going to have one hell of a story on our hands. Let's get cracking, okay?
You got it.
She hung up the phone and sat down for a moment, drumming her fingers on the desk. She bit her lower lip and then decided. She picked up the phone and dialed the number at the federal building.
Central Intelligence Agency.
This is Linda Tellerman, Eyewitness News,
she said.
Let me speak to Oliver Higgins.
One moment, please.
She waited.
I'm sorry, Miss Tellerman. Mr. Higgins isn't available right now. Can I take a message?
Tell him it's absolutely vital they get back to me as soon as possible,
she said.
He's got my number. Tell him I've got some very important information for him. It could be a matter of national security.
Would you like me to connect you with Director Harding's office?
She thought quickly. No, Harding wasn't the right man for something like this. Even if he took it seriously, he'd only pass it on to someone else. And by the time anything was done about it, then if what Tracy said was true, it could be too late.
No, I have to speak to Higgins personally. Please tell him it's really important.
I'll be sure he gets your message as soon as he comes in, Miss Tellerman.
Please tell him to call me as soon as possible. Thank you.
She hung up the phone. Maybe it was all some sort of hoax, she thought, but Tracy did sound scared. Just in case it wasn't, this was no time to sit on information like this. If it was true, they'd have to evacuate the city. Only how? And even if they could evacuate New York, there was nothing to prevent Cord from striking at Boston or Chicago or Detroit or... Her phone rang and she snatched it up.
Linda Tellerman.
Linda, it's Randy. I've got some of that information for you. I'm still working on the rest. Want me to boot it up for you?
Go ahead,
she said, turning on her computer. Seconds later, the file on Dr. Stephen Vincent Franks appeared on the screen. Graduate of MIT with a degree in nuclear physics. Specialist in strategic weapons. Attached to the Department of Defense. She held her breath as she scanned the data on the screen. There was a notation at the bottom of the file that they had recently done a story about him. She took down the file number, called the video library, and had them rush the cassette to her desk. As soon as it was delivered, she inserted it into her VCR. The reporter who had done the interview was Steve Howard. She fast-forwarded past his intro and stopped when Frank started speaking.
Past time that we brought our attention to this,
Franks was saying.
But now that General Cord has got the area well under control, we'll be able to go in and start the dismantling procedure. Will it be dangerous, Doctor? Well, there will be certain hazards, of course, but there's really no cause for alarm. Once we've gained access to the launch control facilities, it'll be a matter of ascertaining the status of the missiles and the electrical equipment, but I can assure the public that with these trained specialists present on the scene and General Cord's troops providing the security, there's absolutely no chance whatsoever of an accidental launch. There were numerous redundancies built into the Peacekeeper system designed to prevent just that. If the equipment is still in order, which is somewhat doubtful, we'll simply use it to stand the missiles down and then we'll proceed with dismantling them. If not, then the power will be down, it will be a relatively simple matter to pull the panels and deactivate the consoles. The primary hazards we'll be encountering will be residual radiation, and when we have to go into the silos and the LCFs that are located in hotspots, but with protective clothing and the proper precautions, these hazards should be fairly minor. In any case...
Linda stopped the tape. Her mouth had gone dry, and she had a sinking feeling in her stomach. So far, it was all checking out. True, Tracy or whoever he was could have seen that report and got Frank's name from there, but still... Her phone rang again.
Linda? Randy again. I've got some of that other stuff for you. You were right. There were a number of special combat units recently transferred to General Cord's command out at Warren at his request to provide additional security for the dismantling of the missiles out there. The 1st Ranger Battalion out of Seattle, a Delta Force unit out of Langley.
Jesus Christ,
said Linda under her breath.
What is it? What have you got?
I can't talk now, Randy. I've got to get the phone. Thanks loads.
Don't mention it. Listen, let me know what you come up with.
Believe me, you'll know,
she said. Okay, start the run, said Higgins. Jennifer punched the code into the console.
Okay, engram data is being loaded.
They stared through the window of the isolation room at Steele, lying on his back on the laboratory couch. His eyes were open. As the data was initiated, he started to blink rapidly as the engram data was transmitted directly into his cybernetic brain. Well, I hope it's what he really wanted, Higgins said. We probably... won't have a chance to modify his programming again. I just got the word a few minutes ago. They're shutting us down as of tomorrow. Jennifer glanced up at him, eyes wide.
So soon?
Higgins grimaced. Carmen's not taking any chances, he said. He's moving fast to make sure the committee doesn't have a chance to change his mind. Jennifer sighed.
All that work, and it was... all for nothing.
Maybe not, said Higgins. They're keeping download operational. They'll be moving the project headquarters to Los Alamos to combine it with the lab there, which was about what we figured they'd do, and you're the logical person to head it up, so you'll be going home, and all this equipment will probably be going with you, along with all the data it contains and any hitchhikers. She gave him a sharp look.
You mean the backup matrix?
He nodded. They still don't know about the matrix, and that could be our ace in the hole. Maybe it's still not too late to play it.
Assuming it's still there,
she said.
I've had two teams running search programs around the clock, and they still haven't found it yet.
You haven't found it, but it's here, said Higgins. It's right here in this lab somewhere, hiding out in one of the data banks, hiding and waiting. She looked uneasy.
Waiting for what?
For answers, maybe. There's still a lot it doesn't know, and this is where all the answers are. Here, and in that room, right there. He looked through the window and at Steele. Besides, he added, where else would it go?
After what I've seen it do, I'm not so sure it couldn't go anywhere it wanted to, she replied. Through the power lines, or the phone lines. Maybe it's already gone. The greatest scientific discovery of the century, and we've lost it.
We haven't lost it yet, Higgins said. We've been talking to Dev Cooper, and I'm finally beginning to understand it all. He spent a lot of time with the Matrix, and he knows it. And the key is that there's virtually no difference between Steele and the Matrix, except that Steele's got a body and the Matrix doesn't. And Steele's experienced some things that the Matrix hasn't, or at least it's never had a chance to, until right now. For a second, she stared at him, puzzled, and then comprehension dawned.
The program run,
she said. That's right. Everything that Steele knows that the Matrix doesn't is all contained right there, said Higgins, indicating the data bank that was loading Steele's own memories back into his cybernetic brain. And whatever's not in there, he turned and looked through the window into the room where Steele lay, is right in there. It's an opportunity I don't think the Matrix can pass up.
My God, you did this all on purpose. You set this up.
We were running out of time, said Higgins. Carmen didn't give me any other choice. That Matrix is the heart and soul of this entire project. It's everything we've worked for. But it's incomplete. And what's more, the Matrix knows it. It knows that it's only a copy of Steele's original engrams. And it knows that while it was in storage, Steele's been out there, living a life and having experiences that it knows nothing about. I'm banking on my knowledge of Steele's nature. We took some very powerful and painful memories from him, but you saw how he reacted. Just the way I knew he would. He wanted them back, but he won't give up any part of himself, even if it means living with pain and cybernetic ghosts. And I'm betting that the Matrix is no different. It wants an identity. It wants a life. It wants to be complete. Well, here's its chance. Let's see what it does.
But what about Steele?
Jennifer swallowed nervously.
What if it decides to insinuate itself into the run? It's overridden our commands before. What if it tries to take him over? We might not be able to stop it.
So what? Said Higgins with a shrug. What difference would it make? It's a backup copy of Steele's own mental engrams. It wouldn't change him any. He'd still be the same person.
We don't know that,
she said.
No, it's much too risky. I'm cutting out of the run right now. Don't!
Higgins grabbed her hands as she reached for the console. Let's see if it will take the bait. We may not have another chance.
And if Steele's programming is damaged, we won't have another chance to fix it, she said. I'm not going to risk it.
She twisted away from him and terminated the broadcast link.
He's absolutely right. We've got no right to.
She frowned suddenly.
What the hell?
What is it?
The program is still running.
She punched the keys, re-entering the code.
I'm getting no response.
It's the Matrix, Higgins said.
I knew it. It's taken the bait.
Jennifer kept punching the keys.
Nothing's happening. I've lost control.
Trace it, Higgins said excitedly.
See where it's coming from. How?
It's right here in the lab somewhere. It's got to be receiving the data somewhere.
Shut down. Shut down all the data banks. The one that won't respond, that's where the Matrix is.
Jennifer got up from the console and shouted out to all the personnel in the huge lab.
Attention, everyone. Whatever you're doing, shut down. Shut down right now. Shut down immediately.
She looked back at the screen on her console, watching the data blurring past as the program progressed at high speed. One by one, the other computers in the lab started to shut down. "I want everything in this lab shut down," Higgins shouted. "I want to know if anything is still running." A moment later, one of the engineers turned from his console.
"Sir, I've got a malfunction here. I'm getting no response."
Bingo! They both ran across the lab.
I can't understand it,"
said the puzzled engineer, entering commands with his keyboard without any result.
"It's not responding to input commands. I can't shut it off. I was able to get the program I was running, but suddenly this came up and I don't know what the hell it is."
Data was flickering past on his screen, faster than the eye could follow. "Gotcha," Higgins said. He glanced up at the racks behind the console. "Okay now, quick, while it's still running, pull the back off." And suddenly one of the data banks on the other side of the lab came online, all of its own accord.
"Dr. Stone!"
shouted a technician.
"This one just came back online all by itself."
Then another one came on. Then another. And another, as the Matrix seemed to leap from one computer to another, traveling with incredible speed through the power lines buried in the floor. "Damn it!" Higgins swore, watching helplessly as all the data banks in the lab started to go on and off, as if animated by gremlins. And then suddenly, the screen before him flickered on once more, only instead of data flashing past in a blur, it displayed an image of Oliver Higgins and Jennifer Stone on the desk up in his office, her skirt hiked high above her waist. "Jesus!" Higgins snatched up a phone and hurled it through the screen. The CRT exploded in a shower of sparks. The engineer beside them was staring in astonishment. Higgins glared at him and stared him down.
"Excuse me,"
the man said, clearing his throat uneasily.
I just remembered there was something I had to do."
Furious, Higgins turned on his heel and stalked out of the lab.
"Christ, Steele,"
said Jennifer. She had forgotten all about him. She hurried back to the isolation room where she had left Steele and flung up the open the door. He was sitting up, rubbing his temples with his fingertips. He looked up as she burst in.
"Steele, are you all right?"
he sighed.
"No, not really, but I suppose I will be, in time."
He smiled sadly.
"I remember it all now. Thank you, Doctor."
He got up and walked past her, out the door. Higgins stormed into his office past his secretary, who tried to speak to him, but he didn't even pause as he went past her and slammed the door. He went straight over to the bar and poured himself a stick drink. "Damn it," he said. "Damn it!" He felt furious, frustrated, and completely helpless. The Matrix had him at his mercy. Short of tearing up the floors and ripping out all the power lines in the lab, there was no way to stop it. Even if they tried that, it could use the power lines to get out of the lab before they could shut off all avenues of escape. He could order all the computers and all the power in the building shut down and risk the wrath of the entire federal bureaucracy, but the Matrix could gain access to the Security Control Center and override him. He could always stay several steps ahead, as it had just graphically demonstrated to him in that little porno display it had put on with him and Jennifer as the stars was as clear a warning as he'd ever seen. Back off. Or else. It was like fighting steel. Was fighting Steele, pitting himself against Steele's electronic twin. And Steele was smart, and Steele was fast, and Steele could be ruthless, and the Matrix could do things that Steele never even dreamed of. Higgins glanced up at the security surveillance camera mounted up near the ceiling and in the corner of his office. The camera was pointing straight at him. The little red light was on. "Damn you!" he shouted, hurling his glass at the lens. He missed, and it shattered against the wall. His intercom buzzed. His secretary. "Now what?" He switched it on. "Yes, Nancy. What is it?" he snapped.
"I'm sorry to disturb you, sir, but there's a call for you from Linda Tellerman of Eyewitness News. She's left several messages, and I've got her on the phone right now. She says it's extremely urgent, a matter of national security. Do you wish to speak with her?"
"National security?" said Higgins. "What the hell's she trying to pull now? Christ, put her on." He switched on the speakerphone, ready to vent all his anger and frustration out on the newswoman. "What is it now, Miss Tellerman?" he snapped. "Jesus, you media people don't care what the hell you say, as long as it gets you what you want, do you? If you're going to throw terms like national security around, you damn well better..."
"Higgins, shut up and listen to me!"
The abruptness and the fierce intensity of her reply took him back momentarily, and he fell silent.
"I've got reason to believe that New York's in danger of being struck by an ICBM,
she said. "What? Are you crazy? What the hell are you talking about?
Just listen to me and don't interrupt. About an hour and a half ago, I had a call from a Sergeant Reese Tracy of the 3rd Division, Northwest Command, stationed out at Warren Air Force Base in Wyoming. That's General Zachary Cord's command. They're supposed to be dismantling the missiles out there, but Tracy said they've opened up a number of silos and launch control facilities, and they haven't dismantled a single one. He said the base is on full alert. There are maintenance crews in all the silos and the LCFs. They've opened up, running checks on all the systems and putting in new computer modules. He told me all the scientists who were sent out to supervise the project are being kept prisoner by General Cord's Cobra Force. But one of them got out and spoke to him. He said that Cord was planning a military coup and that he was going to use the missiles to blackmail the government into giving him control. And if they didn't give in to his demands, he was going to drop a peacekeeper on Midtown.
For a moment, Higgins was stunned into silence. Then he burst out laughing. What have the hell have you been smoking? He said. That's the most ridiculous thing I have ever heard. I happen to know Zachary Cord, Miss Tellerman. I served with him in the Special Operations Group. The man's a patriot of the first rank. Somebody's been pulling your leg. I thought you were too good a reporter to fall for a cock and bull story like that, for crying out loud.
I know it sounds crazy, Higgins. I didn't believe it either, but I looked into it. Tracy said the name of a scientist he spoke to was Dr. Stephen Franks. I ran a check on him. We recently did an interview with him, and he was one of the people the government sent out to Warren to supervise the dismantling of the missiles.
If you did an interview with this Franks guy, your caller probably saw it and got the name from there, said Higgins.
Yes, I thought of that too, but he also said that Cord had brought in special units from the other military bases around the country, Rangers and Delta Force. We never reported anything like that. I looked into it, and it was true. A battalion of Rangers was sent out to Warren from Seattle at Cord's own request, and a Delta Force unit went out to Warren from Langley. Why does Cord need elite military units like that just to provide extra security when he's already got the Cobra Force and the regular troops under his command? I ran a check on Tracy, too. There is a Staff Sergeant Reese Tracy attached to the 3rd Division of the Northwest Command at Warren. He's part of the unit that recently came up from Denver, and he's been reported as AWOL. The Denver police have been alerted to look out for him. Everything he told me checks out. I also tried calling General Cord out at Warren, but they wouldn't put my call through.
Yeah, well, I can hardly blame them.
Higgins, I've been in this business for a long time, and I've picked up a damn good instinct for telling whether or not a tip is on the level. This one is legit. I can feel it in my gut.
Your gut, huh? Higgins snorted. All right, Miss Tellerman. I'll check it out. What the hell? I haven't spoken to Zach Cord in a long time. We can probably have a good laugh over this.
Well, before you start laughing, Franks told Tracy that General Cord has gone insane. Tracy went AWOL to get the word out. He said he'd try to call me again in about 2 hours, unless they ran him down and killed him first. If he's still okay, I should be hearing him from him any time. All right, maybe this is a cock and bull story, as you put it. Tracy himself said it sounded crazy and he had no proof, but he also asked me if I could afford to take a chance if this wasn't on the level. Can you?
She sounded frightened. Higgins frowned. He knew Linda Tellerman. She was a tough street reporter, and she didn't frighten easily. She also wasn't gullible.
And here's something else for you to think about,
she said.
Tracy said they sent a chopper out to intercept him on the road to Denver. He said he had to shoot it down. I've confirmed that. The Denver Strike Force was informed that he was unbalanced, armed with a full battle kit, and dangerous. They were told to take no chances, that he had already shut down an X-Wing chopper with a rocket launcher. Why would they bother to send out an attack helicopter after only one deserter? Doesn't that seem a little like overkill to you?
All right, Miss Tellerman. I'll look into it. Frankly, I think this is the craziest thing I've ever heard, but I'll check it out, okay? And if this Tracy character calls you back, you figure out where he is and tell him to stay put and call me right away.
Forget it. I'm not going to jeopardize my source. For all I know, you'll turn him right over to your buddy, Cord.
All right. If you don't trust me, then give him my number and tell him to call me. She hesitated.
Okay. I can do that, but I'll warn him about a trace.
Fine, said Higgins with a grimace. You do that.
I'm still investigating this, Higgins. I didn't have to call you. You know that. But like Tracy said, I didn't want to take the chance that he wasn't on the level. As far as I'm convinced, and as far as I'm concerned, I fulfilled my responsibility. The moment I'm absolutely sure that I can back this up, I'm going on the air with this.
What? Now, wait a minute, Higgins said. Are you nuts? What the hell are you trying to do? Start a citywide panic?
The people have a right to know.
Come off it. This is crazy. You try to pull anything like that, and so help me, I'll have you placed under arrest so fast, your head will spin.
Go ahead and try it. But if I were you, I'd be more worried about your buddy, Cord. He's the one with his finger on the button.
She hung up. Higgins stared at the speakerphone. The woman had gone completely around the bend. If she went on the air with a crazy story like that, only what if it wasn't crazy? No, thought Higgins, dismissing the possibility as ludicrous. But then, Linda Tellerman had never been someone to go off half-cocked. She was a good reporter, a pain in the ass, but he had to admit that she was damn good at her job, and she wasn't irresponsible. And then he remembered something that Zach Cord used to say back in the old days, when he'd get fed up with the bureaucrats. If they had any goddamn sense, they'd let the military handle things instead of running around like dogs, chasing their own tails. We're the only ones who ever get anything done. If I had my way, I'd kick all those bastards out and put this country under martial law. Wipe out all the goddamn rebels, raiders, and anarchists, and get things fucking organized for Christ's sakes. But back then, they'd all said things like that at one time or another. Just frustrated soldiers blowing off some steam. That's all it was. Or was it? Zach always was a maverick. He did things his own way. He always got results, and his first loyalty was always to the people under his command. But this was really crazy. Higgins buzzed his secretary. Nancy, get me Warren Air Force Base out in Wyoming. I want to speak to General Cord.
Yes, sir. Right away.
He took a deep breath. He hadn't spoken to Zach Cord in a long time. What would he say to him? Hi, Zach. How are you doing? Long time. Listen, I hear you're planning to nuke us all here in New York. Any truth to that? Yeah, they'd probably have a good laugh over the whole thing. Several moments later, his secretary buzzed him back.
Higgins, I've got Warren on the line.
He switched on the speakerphone. Zach! How the hell are you, you old bastard?
This is Lieutenant Grogan, officer of the day speaking.
I asked for General Cord, said Higgins. My secretary didn't tell you who was calling?
She did that, sir, but General Cord is a very busy man. He's not taking any calls right now. What can I do for you?
You can get on the horn to General Cord, Lieutenant, and tell him that Oliver Higgins of the CIA is calling.
Sorry, sir, I can't do that, as I've already explained.
Now you listen to me, Shavetail, Higgins said. I knew Zachary Cord when you were still getting potty trained. We served together in the SOG. I sincerely suggest you pick up your phone and let him know who's calling, or by this time next week, you'll be a private shoveling manure in the most godforsaken agro commune I can find. You got me, mister? There was a brief silence.
One moment, sir.
Higgins waited, annoyed. Fucking Army Mickey Mouse, he thought. After a short while, the OD came back on the phone.
General Cord will speak to you, Mr. Higgins. One moment, please. I'll put you through.
A minute later, Cord was on the phone.
Skeet! That really you?
It's me, Zach. It's been a long time. How are you?
Still eating bureaucrats like you for breakfast,
Cord said with a chuckle.
So you're still with the agency, huh? Getting fat behind a desk? What's on your mind?
Oh, just thought I'd call and ask you about this story that I heard, said Higgins.
What story is that?
Higgins chuckled. It's about those missiles you're babysitting out there. I hear you've got them pointed at us here in New York. There was a brief silence. Higgins felt a chill run down his spine.
Where do you hear that?
Said Cord. A little bird told me.
Yeah? What else did this little bird tell you?
Higgins swallowed hard. His stomach suddenly felt tense. Something about how you weren't dismantling any of those missiles out there.
about how you were getting them all operational, about how you were keeping those scientists under guard and bringing in Delta Force and Rangers and putting the base on full alert while you were getting ready to pull a military coup. Funny joke, huh?
That bird's name wouldn't happen to be Sergeant Reese Tracy, would it?
What if it would?
He's a goddamned traitor.
There was a slight pause.
You calling from New York, Skeet?
Higgins moistened his lips. Yeah, the federal building.
You should have stuck with me, Skeet. Good soldier like you doesn't belong behind a desk. You should come out here. Open country. Lots of space. I could use a man like you. Put you to work. Trim off some of that office fat. New York's not a healthy place to be.
Zach, what are you telling me?
We go back a long way, Skeet. You saved my life once. So I'll tell you this for old time's sake. Hang up the phone, pack your bags, and get out of town!
He heard the click as Cord hung up the receiver. Higgins stared at the speakerphone with stunned disbelief. Holy shit, he whispered. He buzzed his secretary. Nancy, this is top priority. Get me the president right away! End of chapter.